Hello again. This is Carol Bond returning with the September 13th issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. We'll continue now with a reading of the obituaries. Warren K. Keith Albaugh, 77, of Decatur, Illinois, longtime owner and operator of The Newsstand, passed away Saturday, September 10th, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Visitation will be 5 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, September 14th, in the Morin and Gerbel Funeral Home. Vigil prayer service at 4:30 p.m. Mass of Christian burial will be 10:30 a.m. Thursday, September 15th, 2016, at Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church, Reverend Richard Welton, celebrant. In lieu of flowers, memorials are suggested to Warren Keith Albaugh Memorial School Fund, care of Prairie State Bank, 1000 West Pershing Road, Decatur, 62526. Gordon Clark, most recently of Phoenix, Arizona, died Thursday, September 1st. He was 93 years old. A private family graveside service will be held at Boiling Springs Cemetery, Decatur. Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Homes, Decatur, are assisting the family with arrangement. William L. Bill Davis passed peacefully in the comfort of his home on September 10th. Bill was born in 1934. Private graveside services will be provided by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Virginia Lee Durland, 79, of Decatur, passed away at 3:51 a.m. Monday, September 12th, at Carriage Crossing of Champaign, Illinois. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, September 14th, at Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, with visitation 1 hour prior to the service at the funeral home. Burial will be in Knobs Cemetery, Tower Hill, Illinois. Memorials may be made to Knobs Baptist Church. Mary Alice Boyd Lanter, 91, of Decatur, passed away at 5:35 a.m. Monday, September 12th, in her home, surrounded by her family. A private family graveside service will be held on Wednesday, September 14th, in North Fork Cemetery. Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion, is assisting the family with services. Memorials may be made to St. Jude's Children's Hospital. Howard L. Ogden, 88, of Decatur, passed away Sunday, September 11th, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Funeral services will be held at 12 noon Thursday, September 15th, at Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur. Visitation will be held from 10 a.m. until service time on Thursday at the funeral home. Burial will be at Graceland Cemetery, Decatur. Memorials may be given to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Richard H. Rocco Poundstone, 56, of Bement, Illinois, passed away at 12:25 a.m. on Saturday, September 10th, at his residence in Bement. Military services will be held on Friday, September 16th at 1:30 p.m. at the Bement Veterans Memorial, Route 105 at the City Park, Bement, Illinois, by the Albert Parker American Legion Post, number 620. Per Rocco's wishes, he was cremated. A celebration of Rocco's life will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, September 16th, at the Albert Parker American Legion Post 620. Memorial contributions can also be made to the Legion. We'll turn now to page 3, where we find several articles of local interest. This one is entitled RSVP Gives Thanks to Nurses, and it was written by Justin Kahn. As Samantha Bishop and the other HSHS St. Mary's Hospital nurses gathered in the hospital's main lobby on Monday, looked in the zip-closed bags that had been handed to them, they all nodded in approval. Quote, "Stress balls," Bishop said, smiling. "That's amazing." Bishop was one of 350 St. Mary's nurses who received a stress reliever kit as a gift from Dove Incorporated. Retired and senior volunteer program RSVP of Macon and DeWitt counties. The bags, packed in several large U-Haul boxes and later distributed to nursing heads in each department, were filled with stress-relieving items. They were part of RSVP's 9/11 Day of Service and Remembrance, this year honoring nurses. Quote, "Nurses have played an important role in response to disaster, from Pearl Harbor to 9/11, and it's important to remember their contributions," RSVP Director Charlie Gillespie said. "We wanted to do something that made our nurses understand how valued and loved they were." Gillespie said every year RSVP honors a different group as part of its 9/11 Day of Service and Remembrance. Last year, RSVP baked cookies for ambulance personnel, and in the past has also honored firefighters and participated in Cell Phones for Soldiers. Chelsea Oberheim, an emergency room nurse since January, said it feels good to know her work is appreciated. Quote, "You work hard to take care of the patients, and as a nurse, that's my passion. But it's nice when people recognize it," Oberheim said. It's good to know you have the backing of others in the community." The bags included stress balls, bubble wrap, a penny with directions for a penny walk, marshmallows, toothpicks, a candle, and a match for a mini marshmallow roast, quotes, and a poem. Quote, "You'd be surprised how many of us do bubble wrap," said Bishop, a facilitator of perioperative services with HSHS the last 5 years. "I don't think there's a nursing position that you don't get stressed out in." The kits were made up from donations by Warner Hospital and Health Services, Bob Evans, and Billingsley Auto and RSVP volunteers. The photograph shows RSVP Director Charlie Gillespie, it's a woman, by the way, handing a stress relief kit to HSHS St. Mary's nurse Michelle Spainhauer during the Day of Service and Remembrance recently. And you can see that this lobby area is very filled with nurses, and there are other women from RSVP handing out the bag. There are a lot of smiles in this photograph. Below this article, we find this headline: "Alleged punching of mother-in-law draws charges," written by Tony Reed and Dateline Decatur. A Decatur man is accused of punching his mother-in-law in the head repeatedly early Monday while his wife clung to his back, trying to stop the attack. Sworn police statements say the wife accuses her 32-year-old husband of ripping out a chunk of her hair during the alleged assault, which the wife's 9-year-old daughter also tried to stop by pulling on the suspect's shirt. The suspect was arrested and booked into the Macon County Jail on 2 counts of domestic battery, allegations he denies. The sworn statements say the suspect and his wife have been married for 10 months, share a house with the mother-in-law, and began arguing after the three of them arrived home at 9:30 p.m. During the dispute, the suspect is accused of, quote, chest bumping his mother-in-law hard enough to knock her off her feet onto the ground. She got back up and continued the argument, but grew fearful, police say, of the suspect becoming more violent. Quote, she felt threatened as if she was going to receive another battery, so she slapped him across the face, the statements allege. The suspect is then accused of shoving her to the ground again and, while his mother-in-law was on her hands and knees, punching her at least 3 times in the head. His wife is said to have told police she did not actually see the punches being thrown because she was on his back trying to stop the assault, but she could hear the punches, according to the statements. Both mother and daughter were in tears when interviewed by patrol officers who saw bruising on the mother-in-law but say they did not see the clump of hair the wife claims was ripped out of her head. The officers located the suspect later and he denied, quote, getting physical with either party in any way. He said his mother-in-law had punched him in the face and he had, quote, merely attempted restraining her from attacking him further. He told police his wife and the 9-year-old girl made up the assault story because his mother-in-law influences them. The suspect is free on $3,000 bond with the condition he has no contact with his mother-in-law or his wife and stays away from the family home. He is due in court October 14th. The A3 Briefs column also has several notices relating to crime in the courts. This one is Dateline Maroa, and the headline is Framing Ex-Wife's Friend. Police say a man stole his ex-wife's credit card and made purchases with it using the name of her current boyfriend in the hopes of blackening the man's name so she would leave him. Sworn statements indicate the 34-year-old suspect took the card August 3rd while visiting his ex-wife's Maroa home, snatching it from a safe hidden in a closet known by only him and her. He later bought $12.75 in gas and a carton of cigarettes valued at $72.65, signing the boyfriend's name. But police say he signed for the cigarette purchase in plain view of in-store video cameras. It's alleged he later returned the card, placing it in the pocket of pajama pants belonging to his ex-wife's boyfriend. He was arrested by Maroa police on Sunday and allegedly admitted what he had done. He was booked on charges of theft and fraud. Then we have an article about a Decatur woman who tried to fill a prescription for a narcotic drug in the name of a dead woman Sunday. She resisted arrest when officers intercepted her as she left a pharmacy, police said. Sworn statements allege the woman presented the forged prescription from promethazine codeine at the Kroger Pharmacy at 1401 West King Street. A pharmacist raised an alarm and pointed out the 21-year-old suspect to police as she left the store. Police said she had to be forcefully pulled into the back of a squad car. The suspect was booked on charges of forgery and resisting police. A Decatur man with three previous driving under the influence of alcohol convictions was pulled over for DUI again Sunday evening, police allege. The 53-year-old was stopped after a patrol officer said he spotted his van weaving. Sworn statements say an initial breath test recorded 0.3%. The suspect, who is currently on parole for his latest DUI conviction, was booked on charges of aggravated DUI and driving while license revoked, which is a felony. He remained jailed Monday night in lieu of posting $20,000 bond. If he makes bail, he is ordered not to consume any alcohol. He is due in court October 11th. A Decatur man who became enraged after a customer flirted with his bartender girlfriend is accused of shoving her so hard into a bathroom wall it, quote, caused the drywall to cave in, according to sworn police statements. The statements say the assault happened Saturday afternoon after the couple, who have lived together for more than 4 years, went back to their home. Police said the 52-year-old victim uses a, quote, neurostimulator to control back pain and appeared barely able to stand when patrol officers spoke to her. The suspect, age 41, was booked on a charge of committing domestic battery while having a prior domestic battery conviction. He remained in the Macon County Jail in Macon County on Monday night in lieu of posting $5,000 bail. If he makes bail, he is ordered to stay away from his girlfriend. We'll turn now to page A7, and find out what our columnists are talking about today. This is the first letter to Abby. Dear Abby, is it possible that people can just fall out of love with each other? We have been married for 21 years and have three kids who are older. Over the last 5 years, my wife and I have stopped communicating. We don't do anything together and have little desire to be with each other anymore. We are good parents, but as far as being husband and wife, we have pretty much neglected each other emotionally and physically. Neither of us has strayed. We haven't been to a marriage counselor because I just don't love my wife anymore, and I'm not saying this to be mean. It's just how I feel. We have failed each other miserably as husband and wife, and she deserves better. She's been a great mom to our three kids, and I would never take that away from her. Can people stay in a loveless marriage? We have talked it over, and we both agree there's nothing left here for each other. I've already told her she needs to do whatever it takes to make herself happy, because I can no longer be here for her emotionally or physically. And this letter is signed, Fell Out of Love. Dear Fell Out of Love, people sometimes remain in loveless marriages for religious or financial reasons because they are afraid a divorce would traumatize the children or because they are afraid of being alone. If you and your wife agree that there is nothing left for either of you and marriage counseling won't fix the dysfunction in your relationship, then the logical next step would be an amicable separation or divorce. Here's the next letter. Dear Abby, I have the most amazing husband. He helps with the housework, provides for us, and loves me unconditionally. Not a day goes by that I don't hear how precious I am to him. It's like a fairy tale, except we never had a formal wedding, just a courthouse ceremony with nobody there but us two. You see, we had to get the paperwork done so I wouldn't have to keep renewing my visa status every few months. Now we can be together in the U.S. with no issues, but I feel like we skipped an important life milestone, and a wedding would be the perfect opportunity to unite both of our families from around the world. The problem is my husband is happy with the way things are. He refuses to spend money on a party and says, quote, if we ever have one, it will be when we are rich, stable, and able to afford it by ourselves. My parents are more than willing to pay. I feel like a lifelong dream was taken away from me. Your thoughts? The letter is signed Missing Out in Virginia. Dear Missing Out, my thoughts are you have a stellar husband and your visa problem is solved. I'd say you have done quite well. If your husband prefers to postpone the fancy celebration until you're more financially stable and foot the bill himself, you should respect him for it. I know I do. Mary Hunt has her Everyday Cheapskate column where she gives tips from readers. And this is how she begins. If you've ever needed to prevent children from closing a door and unwittingly locking themselves in the bathroom, you may know the old hand towel trick. Throw the hand towel over the top of the door. That's it. No matter how hard a child tries to close it, no can do. I've always loved that handy-dandy trick, but I have to admit I'd never thought about how to use a similar trick to keep a child from opening a door. Well, I hadn't until I heard from one of today's great readers. And this is what Barbara has to say. My 2-year-old grandson opened the door and went outside while I was in the bathroom. I live in an apartment and am not allowed to install a chain or other hardware on the door. I searched for a portable lock and found several kinds, all about $15 to $25. I finally heard of closing a folded washcloth in the crack between the door and door jamb that effectively jams the door without harming it. It takes an adult's strength to open the door and pull the cloth out. I'm so thankful for this tip because it didn't cost me a thing and it really works. Here's the next one called Use 'em Up to the Last Peel. And this is from a reader named Kate. Rather than throwing out overly ripe vegetables, I simmer them in water to make a vegetable stock. I keep peelings and other vegetable odds and ends, even potato cooking water, in a bag in the freezer until it's full. Then I make the stock. And there's a recipe that accompanies this. To make vegetable stock, chop the vegetables into 1-inch chunks. Make sure they've been washed. Heat 1 to 2 tablespoons of oil in a soup pot. Add vegetable scraps, onion, celery, carrots, scallions, garlic, herb, and so forth. Cook over high heat for 5 to 10 minutes, stirring frequently. Add salt and water, more or less, depending on volume of vegetables, and bring to a boil. Lower heat and simmer uncovered for 30 minutes. Strain the broth and discard the vegetables. Store the broth in a covered container in the refrigerator or freezer. The next hint is from John, and the headline is Stacked Grilled Cheese. My wife and I enjoyed your recent column on grilled cheese sandwiches. We may just try some of your suggested variations. When we make grilled cheese, we like to include pickle slices. We typically use the pre-sliced Vlasic Stacker's dill pickles. Timing is important with these. You really don't want to heat the pickle itself, so you need to pull the sandwich apart right after it comes off the griddle, before the cheese sets, to insert the pickle slice. One alternative is to put a slice or two of deli ham on one of the bread slices so that this quick action isn't needed. And this is an answer from Mary. Dear John, although I am a huge fan of pickles, your humble columnist found this idea to be a bit off-putting, if not downright odd. Hot melted cheese and cold dill pickles? But I must apologize for jumping to conclusions. I tried it. Oh my, it's absolutely delicious. Next, I'm going to try Vlasic bread and butter stackers. Your instructions are spot on. Reader Stacy has this idea. I've been reading your blog for several years and have used so many of your fabulous tips. I would like to add one that I've never seen mentioned. For a dusting or cleaning rag, I have found that nothing beats a good old-fashioned cotton diaper. I buy 24 very clean retired diapers, they'll never be that white again, from Didi Diaper Service in Pasadena, California, for $22.90. They last an incredibly long time, and I feel good about giving the diapers a second life and keeping them out of the landfill. Mary's answer, Dear Stacy, what a great idea. As I looked into this, I found that mechanics, contractors, and others buy up retired diapers just about as fast as they become available for purchase. Every diaper service I contacted across the country sells its retired diaper stock. Some sell by the dozen, others by the pound. Some companies require pickup, but others will ship. I suggest you search online for a diaper service in your local area and then give the company a call. Your friendly IRR reader would like to add this benefit. They don't fray and shred like torn old rags do. This is a wonderful tip. This has been Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald Review, dated September 13, 2016. I look forward very much to reading with you again next week.